study this minutia detail stuff. And it does this. It takes you down to a microscope level, right? Well, you're not going to get it from a microscope level. You're going to have to get back up to a kind of almost a telescope level where you're looking at the broad picture. And the only way I can do that is kind of what I passed out to you what I used sort of as a visual aid for the class last week, and I took out 15 because we hadn't done it. And that's just to remind you that we did what we've already done. But when you get something like this, you just kind of have to spread it all out and sit and write every person's name in as they come and what information you get on them. And then you find, like, for instance, I was thinking about that this morning. David with, which guy is it? Him.
Shimei.
He wants to kill him.
He's always wanting
to kill him. And twice, and I got it one time, but not twice until I went over it again. The second time, the first time it made sense because Shimei is going around cursing him and throwing things at him and stuff. So it made sense he wanted to eliminate it. But David says, basically, no. If this is what God has wrought, then we'll let God do what God's going to do. Well, the second time he comes back, he's repented. And he comes to David repentant, and he still says, let's kill him.
Joab says, for the tape, I'm saying, Joab says, let's
kill him. Oh, not Joab. His brother.
His brother, Abishai.
Abishai, the other commander. Yeah. And so you're not going to get that kind of thing unless you have a tremendous mind, which I don't have that kind of mind, that remembers all those little intricate facts. You're going to have to start putting it in a place that you can remember. Now, all of us learn differently. I am a very visual learner, but some of you, like I learned this with Grace. When Grace and I would go drive to Monroe, because I taught a class in Monroe, and Grace came with me for years, she always knew how to get there, but she knew it by, it's like she saw in her mind this, where she would go like this, and then you turn right at, and then have the name, and you go 3/4 of a mile, and you turn left. I don't see that way. I see, there's the end, and I do, and I keep a direction in my mind, and I just get there, because I have this automatic direction in my mind. She can't understand me, and I can't understand her, in the sense of how we see. It's like when I think, and you were saying something, I thought about it. Part of the reason I have a mind that remembers so much, on one hand, is because it's like knowledge is all these things like this. And I can just grab a hold of part of that and pull it in. Where if you're seeing the way Grace sees, you can't do that unless you discipline yourself a certain way. And that's what I'm telling you about now. What I do is on this paper, where's my paper? I wrote, and even at that, I could have written another 6 pages, but I didn't. I wrote, when we come up to the people, what I learned about them. And that's why I'm doing it this way. So when I talk to you about Jonadab, we ask ourselves, what do we remember about him? Well, we met him, I think, in chapter 13 or 14.
13.
13. And the first time we meet him, he is the friend of Absalom, and he's also, we find out, he's also his cousin. But that's not the only time we meet him. Then we have to remember, so I meet him later, and we meet him later when Absalom has killed Amnon, and the information comes back to David. You don't need to write any of this down, because we're going to go through this. But the information comes back to David that all the sons are dead. And Jonadab says, well, not all the sons, just Amnon. Well, how do you know that? So you start to get his character. He's the one who was shrewd. And so we look up shrewd and start understanding, okay, there's a shrewd man. Well, we even see that he's shrewd later on when he's the one who tells David that Amnon is the only one dead, which he had to have known ahead of time was going to happen. So why is he telling David to kind of endear himself to David? So you start getting this character of this person by taking all these little parts and writing it down. Now, it's hard to do it in the amount of time we have. It just is. And especially since you're going through and answering questions for a lesson. So, for those of you who might learn better by doing this when there's a lot of people, I would do this and not the lesson. If you learn better by doing the lesson, then do the lesson. There are lots of different ways. I don't study the lessons myself. I do go through them to make sure I touch bases with all the things that you're studying, but that's not the way I learn well. I ask questions, different questions than she would ask you. So, why am I telling you this? Because there's a lot of different ways to learn, and there's a lot of different ways to put that information in your head. And after we go through this lesson, most of these people we're never going to look at again. So it's just the beginning of you getting a handle on the books of Samuel. Are you going to have it perfect? No, none of us are. We have to go through it about 10 times to do that. But we've got this visual building in our head. We've got a visual of Absalom. We've got a visual of David and his relationship. David, I mean, more than anything else, I get out of this reading David how given to his emotions he is, truly. Absalom is not given to his emotions. He's driven forward to accomplish his goals, and his father is basically not, has gotten in his way. But he's a patient man. We saw he was patient. How did we see he was patient?
He waited 2 years.
And actually, and even in that, we also saw he waited 2 years to kill Amnon.
And 3 years.
But in 3 years...
He was away.
He was away in another country. And then 2 years he came back to Jerusalem waiting for his father to pay attention to him. So we learned that as much as we like the word patience, and that sounds like a holy godly thing, it's what you do with your time when you're being patient. What are you putting in your mind? What are you going through? Those are the things we can learn. So even though Amnon was impatient and it destroyed his life and the life of his half-sister and basically set Absalom on a bad course, it isn't patience or impatience. So what would the solution be?
Waiting on the Lord.
Waiting on the Lord. Mm-hmm. Keeping your mind on the Lord. For us, focusing on Jesus. I sent you that article on forgiveness. Did you want to share a little what you said? You don't have to. About the article on forgiveness? You don't have to.
I don't know how to stop.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. Because that's what we talked about. If he had used that time from the time his brother did what he did and sought forgiveness for him, he would have had an entirely different future. Yeah. In fact, the whole nation of, if all of Israel would have had a different future. And so what that tells us and teaches us, do you want to share what you had about forgiveness?
Yeah. I'm just going to read what I wrote so I can just remember everything. It's not long, though. I just basically said it's a great article, and it's something that I experienced personally, and some of you have heard this story. Our daughter in love was killed by a drunk driver many years ago, and the Lord spoke to my heart as my husband and I were driving to the hospital, that I was to lead our family in not harboring bitterness or hate, but to immediately forgive. So I had to forgive on the way to the hospital.
Which is like very quick.
Yeah. So that I could, when I got there, I could be prepared. And I was to tell our loved ones who were all gathered. We were gathered around our son because our daughter had died at Harborview. And so when our son was at Everett, and a whole story in itself. But anyway, so I walked into that where everybody had gathered to one of our sons because they knew that the daughter had been killed. So there was no sense going to Harborview right now. So we were there. And so I walked in to tell them that Much had already been taken from us, but we must not allow our love to be taken through bitterness and hate. And as I read the article, The Five Myths About Forgiveness that Kit sent, I just said that I could personally attest to the truth of some of this, and that I don't know how many times during those days and months and went into a couple of years that I repeated the same message of don't let it take away your love. Don't let what's been taken away turn into bitterness and turn into hate. And it was difficult because the person that was responsible didn't get very long in jail for doing that, and so that was very, very difficult to. But and I liked what the article had to say when he says to withhold forgiveness only continues the pain felt by the one who is hurt. It doesn't really injure the guilty party. If we held on to bitterness and hate, that doesn't do anything for the person that killed her.
Yeah.
It doesn't connect to them at all. It only hurts us. When you refuse to forgive, you're only hurting yourself. And then he said, personal offenses should be handled by extending forgiveness, even if it's never asked for. Forgiveness sets the victim free, us. It sets us free.
Yeah.
To withhold forgiveness hurts us far more than it does that other person, because they don't even know. They may never even know. Now, Jesus personally commands that we forgive. It's not optional, and that's important for us to remember as Christians. We forgive because we've been forgiven. But forgiveness says to us, I'm leaving this in God's hands. And as Christ has forgiven us, so we are to let go of those offenses and forgive others. And it shows the world, and this attested to a lot more people than our family, it shows the world the glory and majesty of God. Because we got asked so many times, right from the emergency room at the hospital, how can you talk about forgiveness? How can you do this? Look what they did to your family. And so right from the beginning, even though that wasn't a position we wanted to be put in or I wanted to be put in, right from the beginning I was witnessing to other people who were walking through the door. And even though it's not, no, I want to take time to just grieve and do this. When you're in God's hands, he may not allow that. He says, no, you've just learned this lesson. I want you to share this lesson. Because there's somebody here that you may not see again, and they need this. They need this lesson. So, and for the lady described in the article, forgiveness will be costly, but it will free her from the haunting and resulting bitterness of the horrific crime committed against her son. And Christ died for you while you were his enemy. And our forgiveness should look like that. So,
and if we, why don't we forgive?
Because we can't get past what's done.
We want justice.
Yeah.
And in reality, even this world can't give that justice. If somebody spent the rest of their lives in jail, and you haven't forgiven, they're still in control of your life.
Right, exactly.
And that's, we see that with Absalom, because that became the control of his life. Mm-hmm. Even to the point of when he had a daughter, he named her Tamar, because he couldn't think of anything else. Mm-hmm. He could only think of his bitterness towards Amnon. And we need to ask ourselves, are we willing to give up the rest of our life for that person we hate?
Well, yeah, exactly, because then you've given them a huge amount of power that they didn't have in the first place.
Right, and they certainly don't have a basis of love to handle that one. And that's where we have to ask the Lord, I believe you say that, help me in my unbelief. I don't know how to get there, Lord.
Right. There's a story about Corrie ten Boom being made to forgive, God telling her to forgive the very guard that was responsible. And again, she's praying saying, I can't do this. I can't do this. This man is sitting here, and he's responsible for the death of my family. I just can't. And God told her that if she would just extend her hand, that's all she had to do, was just hold out your hand, and I will do the rest. And God did that for her.
And set her free.
Yeah.
And has set many people free with that story.
Yeah.
Darlene Diamond Rose did the same thing. She didn't think she could ever forgive that guard over the prisoner of war camp. She found out years later that she couldn't.
Yeah.
In my case, God gave me compassion for the men. And it was, I don't know how to describe it. It was all of a sudden just a compassion washed over me, and I felt so sorry for him and was able to pray for him where I hadn't been able to before. And that's how I worked to forgiveness.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways the Lord gives us to, but it's seeking, it truly is acknowledging we can't, but he can. And in your case, he specifically even told you, this is what I want you to do. But do we believe that that wrath, judgment is God's? Do we believe that vengeance belongs to him? If we say we believe that but carry the unforgiveness, we don't believe it. We still want something. And there are many of us in this room who would tend towards wanting justice rather than love. And we think we want love, but we want justice. And that's higher than love, it's not. And if you recognize that in yourself, in the makeup that you have from the day you were born, and I'm a justice person, that I know right away I have to run to the Lord for love, because I don't have it. I just don't. And, I mean, when somebody comes knocking at the door, I don't even have to know who it is. I ask the Lord for love and wisdom. And when somebody calls on the telephone before I answer it, whether I know who it is or not, I ask for love and wisdom, because I don't have those things. And the Lord tells us to pray for those things. And so as we pray for love and we find the need to forgive, we'll be able to know where to go for that. And so that's the kind of thing that we learn by watching these different people's situations. It isn't just... The reason Kay has questions for you to answer is you guys can't do what I do yet. Some of you can, but by nature, I go through and ask questions through the whole, everything I read. That's how I learn. Well, that's how you're learning, too. And if you come to a point where you can learn those, ask those questions yourself, then honestly, you don't really need to do the lessons the same way. What, for instance, if we come up to a name that you know you've seen before and you don't remember where it was, how do you find that name?
I look in my concordance or cross-references.
Cross-references or concordances.
Where have I seen this before and in what context?
That's why when I got into that name, started going through the line, and I was telling some of the ladies earlier, when you look at your David's lineage in the back, I think it's inaccurate, and I think it's inaccurate. And I kept looking at that and looking at it, and I went to concordances for the name, and I went to tons of other writing, and never found the statement ever again, but and we'll talk about when we get there, but through the concordance I found out that what I was feeling was probably accurate. Would I bet my life on it? No, I don't need to either. Okay, let's look at Samuel 14. We finished with 25, but really it starts at 21. It's talking about the king talking to Joab, and he said, "Surely I will surely do this thing. Go therefore, bring back the young man Absalom." And this is when Absalom is living at his other grandfather's house. What happens? Tell me what happens there. So Joab goes and gets Absalom.
Well, David tells him to go to his own house, not to bring him to David.
So we have two things that are stated to Absalom when he comes back. He isn't forgiven. He's not told he's forgiven, right?
Yeah.
He is told he's allowed to come back to Jerusalem, and he's allowed to stay in his own house, but he can't see his father's face. And there's no other explanation. So where we started was verse 25. Now in all Israel, there was no one as handsome as Absalom. So we're beginning to learn about Absalom. What do we learn about Absalom in the next verses? He was handsome.
He has lots of hair.
He had lots of hair. I went through about 50 books to try and figure out how much hair that was. It's about 6.24 pounds.
Woo. Woo. My Bible said 5 pounds.
Well, it's...
2.3 full pounds.
Shekels have, there's silver shekels, brass shekels, gold shekels, blah, 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 blah. They think these are the ones that are about a half an ounce, a pound. Let's see, how did I figure it out? Oh, I have it written down somewhere. A unit of weight, metal, it's a unit of weight for metals and probably around 12 grams or 1/2 ounce. So every shekel is a half an ounce. So if you divide that by... How many ounces are there in a pound?
16.
Right. 12 grams. 16 ounces. So you divide 16 into 200 and then take half of that. It comes out to about 6 point... I was always told it was about 10 pounds, and I can't imagine anybody having 10 pounds of hair. No matter how you look at it, if you weigh any of our hair, I'm sure mine doesn't even weigh a pound, and I have pretty thick hair. So you can imagine what his looked like. So why would a man let his hair grow like that?
He did in those days, didn't he?
No, he's pretty unique to that.
The baldness of the disgrace.
It's probably his beauty.
His beauty. He was also probably identifying with the judge. Who?
Samson.
He was having because how would people have looked at Samson? Heroic, strong, a leader, you know, all of these kinds of things. We get the feeling that Absalom is rather full of himself. So we're beginning to see how. He's very handsome. All of Israel thought he was very handsome. He had a lot of hair. He was strong. Was looked at it that way. Yeah. And what did he do? What did we learn about his children?
Three sons and a daughter.
Three sons and a daughter, but we never see of those sons again. And later on when he's looking for one to leave his name with, he no longer has any sons, so they probably died young. What else do we know about him? So how long did he live in Jerusalem?
2 years.
And he still didn't see the king's face, so what did he do about that?
But he was growing in popularity with the people. He was highly praised.
What did he do to accomplish that?
He
sat by the gate. Why the gate?
So that's where the people brought their
everybody
complaints.
Comes in, through the gates.
Yeah.
And they brought their what?
Their complaints, and he talked to them and say, well, if I was king...
Or judge at this point. If I were judge,
I would do such and such. They liked what they heard.
Sure, because it's hands on, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, David's not doing this, is he?
And he's telling them, "See, your claims are good and right, but no man listens to you. I'm part of the king." Yeah.
He was being a politician.
Yes, he was, because he had a goal in mind, didn't he? Yeah, a couple of goals. Okay, so. So when Joab came to the king and told him about Absalom, what did the king do? Well, let's. How did he get Joab's attention first? I should ask that.
Burn his field.
He burned his field. That would be like somebody else would probably take
if Joab.
But was anybody else, Joab would have taken his life. What did you say?
He sent for Joab, and Joab wouldn't come. So there.
So why do you think Joab didn't come when he went all the way to Geshur to get him? To pick him up.
Absalom was a naughty little boy.
What?
He was a naughty little boy.
There were 4 kids. I don't think he was too little.
I know.
But why do you think Joab didn't go?
Probably didn't know what to tell him.
Because who did who did Absalom really want? And he can't do that. So he, and Absalom, if you read the story of Joab all the way through, he's pretty impatient with things when they don't go the way he wants them to, you know. Well, even Absalom. Here he goes to get Absalom. He's the one who asked his father to pay attention. In fact, how did he get David's attention?
God's story.
Did he tell it?
No.
A woman did it, so she did it very gently. He hired a storyteller, evidently. So he obviously cared, but how did he care? And what did he care about? Was it David he cared about? Was it Israel he cared about?
No.
Was it the son he cared about?
You talk about Joab or Absalom?
Joab, to Absalom.
Politically, it was because of the country. The country was seeing what was happening, and he wanted to hush.
Because what is his line of business?
He's a politician. He's an army.
Well, he's actually a military.
He's a commander.
He's a commander. He's military. Everything fits that kind of picture. So when we think of, where is he? Joab, he's a military man. He makes decisions based on military, and that would be what is best for the country to accomplish what they need to accomplish. So when we look at Joab and think of he as being compassionate, he doesn't follow through with it if it's compassion. Because how does Joab, what's the final dealing Joab has with Absalom?
He killed him.
He killed him. He's the one who killed him. He was hanging in a tree. He took a sword, three swords, and he killed him. So does he care about Absalom?
No.
Did his father want Absalom dead?
No.
In fact, what did he say?
Not to harm him, to protect him.
And he just couldn't have anything to do with a waste of time. This is a waste of time. Just annihilate him. So as you get the picture of Joab, he is military.
I don't think he likes Absalom because he wouldn't. I don't think he came because Absalom sent for him three times. Mm-hmm. But to me, Absalom seems like he's arrogant here. He said, I sent for you that I may send you to the king. And I don't think Joab liked him.
Well, I don't think he sure liked him with that one. Because how does Joab visualize himself?
I think he visualizes himself more important than Absalom.
How do we know that he does?
Well, for one thing, he didn't jump at Absalom's call and ask how high on the way up.
Even though he was the king's son.
Yeah.
What are some of the other places we see Joab? See if I can get you to some of the places. What are some of the other things we learn about him? Okay, we had to let's look at the story in 18, 14, around there, about his dealing with Absalom in the end.
Okay, chapter 18?
Yeah. We're going to do this differently, guys. Like I said, we're taking it through people, not necessarily through the... There's so many verses here, we cannot read through all of them.
Chapter 18, verse 14?
Around there, yeah.
He said, yeah, I will not waste my time here with you.
And who's he saying that to?
He's saying it to Absalom.
No, he's not saying it to Absalom.
Oh, he's saying it to the guy, yeah.
Okay, there's a very patient man. Just prior to that, there's a story. We don't even have his name. Somebody want to read that? Can you see what it is? He's the one who found Absalom. He doesn't take Absalom's life. Joab tells him, I'd have given you money if you'd have killed him. Now I have to deal with this. But what did the man say?
It really starts in verse 10.
Go ahead, read it.
A certain man saw it. He told Joab and said, behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak. Then Joab said to the man who told him, now behold, you saw him? Why then did you not strike him there to the ground? And I would have given you 10 pieces of silver and a belt. The man said to Joab, even if I should receive 1,000 pieces of silver in my hand, I would not put out my hand against the king's son, for in our hearing, the king charged you and Abishai and Ittai, saying,
Ittai the Hittite.
protect for me the young man Absalom. Otherwise, if I had dealt treacherously against his life and there is nothing taken from the king, then you yourself would have stood aloof. Then Joab said, I will not waste my time here with you. So he took 3 spears in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. And this is the part I don't understand. And 10 young men who carried Joab's armor, gathered around and struck Absalom and killed him.
He just wasn't finished with the first 3.
Then Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing Israel, for Joab restrained the people. They took Absalom and cast him in a deep pit in the forest and erected over him a very great heap of stones. And all Israel fled, each to his tent. Now Absalom, in his lifetime, had taken and set up for himself a pillar which is in the king's valley. For he said, I have no son to preserve my name. So he named the pillar after his own name, and it's called Absalom's Monument to this day.
And to this day, evidently. Were you telling me about that, that you had about the... You did? What did you tell me?
That today, there's a monument in that area. I think it's somewhere in Ecclesiastes.
Oh, that's right.
And even today, as Orthodox Jews walk by, they'll spit on it because it's believed to be his. That's holding a grudge.
Well, that's holding a grudge, yes. So that's a lack of forgiveness. Now, you take Joab and you take David. How are they viewing Absalom differently? How does Joab view Absalom? Remembering who Joab is.
He's an enemy. He's dead.
He's an enemy and he's a commander. Therefore, the enemy of the state needs to die. That's all they saw him as, even though he's had personal relationships with him, and not to mention the fact it's his nephew.
Yeah.
Or his relative. Okay, so how does David view Absalom?
His son, and he loves him.
I don't know, you know, I'm not sure about the love thing. I'm thinking this through. I look at all the words. What do we know? How was David's response to what was going on with Absalom? Starting back with Absalom killing Amnon, what is the first thing Absalom did?
He ran away.
First, he ran away. What was David's response?
He was angry,
but he did nothing. Okay. Then when Absalom goes through the whole situation that he does, and then he dies, what is David's response to that?
He grieves.
He grieves, and
he says, "Oh, Absalom, Absalom."
I looked up the words. They're not quite as simple as grieving.
He wept. It says
he wept.
In verse 33.
He tore his clothes, which is a sign of what?
Mourning.
I think that there is a bigger picture that what David was going through. And maybe I'll find it.
But he says, I would have died instead of you, Absalom, my son. Was he thinking, David thinking that Absalom should succeed him and
he was supposed to, wasn't he? Except for that he'd already promised Bathsheba what?
That her son, Solomon,
would sit on the throne. So he knew that Absalom wouldn't. But I think with David... And the words bear this out. I wouldn't have come up with it except for that I looked up the words. Let me get to it so I can say it to you. But the words... Okay, first, 1833. The king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. Deeply moved means it's a picture of shaking, trembling... agitated, disturbed, roused up, rage, provoked. It is, so his first response was very physical, okay? He went up to the chamber and wept. And the picture is wailing, like they do at the Wailing Wall. You know, that's what they how they respond to death in Israel. Deep wailing, but it's even more than that. It's used to describe a penitence weeping before the Lord. I think David was very aware that Absalom was not going to be with God eternally. Now think about the picture he had of losing his first child with Bathsheba. When did he mourn?
While the child was ill.
While the child was ill. Why?
Because there was hope that he would survive.
There was hope, and it was a whole week before he died. And when he died, what did he do?
He got up and went about his business.
He stopped because it was over. When Amnon died, did you see the same thing for Amnon?
No.
In fact, he said what?
He said something about Absalom.
Absalom was still alive. Amnon was dead. He didn't weep for Amnon because it was done. But he's weeping for Absalom after he's dead. This is a different picture. It's not just the picture of a loss of a son, because he didn't even bring him back to see his face when he came to Jerusalem. This is more of an awareness that he is separated for eternity because of what he's done and the choices he's made in his life.
And what he said with that little child was, I'll see him again.
Right. So he believed he would see him again. I don't know what he thought about Amnon. He really doesn't tell us. That's kind of an enigma right there. But the picture of Absalom was he was lost to him. I think the reason he didn't see his face, the reason he just kissed him instead of embracing him when he came to Jerusalem and he came up to see him, is he was grieving even then. Because he was grieving for this man who had held that bitterness, who killed his brother, who didn't repent from it. And he knew if he kept on that same road, it was going to be a road of separation. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a grief more than grieving. It's a grief, like if someone you love dies who knows the Lord, your sorrow fills your heart. You grieve, you weep, but you know where they are. And that gives you strength and courage and hope. He had no hope for Absalom.
Well, do you think some of David's reaction was guilt, because he feels that he brought all this on Absalom himself by his actions, by
his inactions.
Yeah, and that Absalom learned all this from him, and it ended in death, and maybe David felt guilty that his son's gone, and
well, I think he knows he didn't put the time into them. I mean, we get that with Samuel, who didn't put the time into his children. Eli, who did not put the time into his sons, who went bad. Samuel wanted his sons to be priests, remember? And they didn't end up priests because they were not good men. So I think there's a heritage of bad fathering here. Now, can you blame it totally on David? You can't, because this is an adult, because they make choices. Adults make choices. But at the same time, you have to see what is the process of David's relationship with his son that pushed his son this way. First, after Tamar was raped and David found out, what did he do?
Nothing.
What could he have done?
He was king. He could do whatever he thought best.
Well, and as a father, he could have brought his daughter to him to protect her, to take care of her.
But he sent her to the brother instead. So he had guilt in that action, too. He sent her. I mean, you know, he could have said, no, you can't go to him. But he sent, you go to your brother, fix him a meal.
And I think this is all the grief that's going through his head. Okay, so then he hears Absalom. And he did the same thing with Absalom and Amnon. Absalom asked for his brother to come to his sheep-shearing situation. And he said to him, why?
He knew.
He knew something wasn't quite right. Did he stop it?
No.
Could he have gone? Could he have gone and stopped it? He didn't do that either. So he was inept in that sense. And then Absalom killed his brother. So what does he do then?
shuns, and he sends Absalom away.
Is that really punishment? He didn't say anything. He didn't
he says,
actually send them away.
Yeah.
He just said nothing.
Get out of my sight.
Is that disciplining your child in the way he should go? Is that raising him up to fear God? Is that raising him to know God?
No.
You know, we talk about forgiveness, but how does a child learn forgiveness except for from your actions and from your words? And he didn't give him any of that. He just heaped on Absalom separation. Okay, so then he lets Absalom come back. But how does he respond to him when he comes back?
He doesn't see him
for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And Absalom has to burn down Joab's garden, barley, to get him to respond. And he finally goes and sees him. And then what does David do when he sees him? He does kiss him. But David kisses all the people that come in to him. And immediately, and we know something's wrong with that, because immediately Absalom goes and starts the plotting. And he goes to the gate and so on and so forth. So we see, so as parents, like even what you were saying with putting the hand out, how many times has there been a child of ours that we really didn't even want to put our hand out to because we're so hurt or angry or whatever? These are the times that we need to learn how to move past what we feel, what's been done to us, and to make that step out for as God's ambassador. David should have been, if nothing else, God's ambassador in the life of Absalom.
I just listened the way he disciplined on the child when he did the wrong things. That time in the Jewish, in the cultures, you know, in our cultures, something wrong. It's an embarrassing. They're not talking about their father, mother hiding in child. Then our cultures did that because when you say anything, nobody know and nobody know. But only myself, father know that. It's just can do. Only he heard himself. But they will cover up for child. Mm-hmm. But then my dad, he had me. He was embarrassed in his position. He's hiding me and their mother give them the pay money to take care of me. That kind of cultures of Japan, China, and all time, that kind of happens, you know. So that's my habit, David thing. So he doing it once and he doing it too. Not like you open up, you didn't confess it because he know the God, but the child, he not teaching all the things.
Right.
So he hiding that. He don't say anything about him. That's all I see that.
Where is David comfortable as a human being? Doing what?
Going to war.
Going to war. Not unlike Job, except for David is much more compassionate. He has much more emotion. And David's emotions control him.
Mm.
And we don't really know because God doesn't give us the whole picture of what went on there, but it could easily have been that he didn't think he could control his feelings if he saw Absalom too. And so he hides behind a wall of what? Strength? Something. Did Absalom need to see his dad's emotions? He did. He needed to see that his dad loved him, cared for him. That's why I think it's very hard to say he loved him, because that isn't what love looks like. That isn't what God's love for us looks like. Yeah.
In 15, verse 30, where he goes up to the Mount of, David goes up to the Mount of Olives and weeps and covers his head, do you think at that point in this verse it says, and David went up the ascent of the Mount of Olives and wept as he went, and his head was covered, and he walked barefoot? Then all the people who were with him each covered his head and went up weeping as they went. Do you think this verse indicates that David is sorry for
15.
His actions and how that he's realizing that perhaps that his actions or lack of action has precipitated this thing with Absalom?
What is that, 15?
1530.
I think you have to ask yourself, what does he do after that? What is head covered? walk barefoot. I think he is doing some kind of repentant thing. But
that's what I'm thinking.
Verse 29, but verse 29, what just returned to Jerusalem?
The ark returned to Jerusalem.
So do you think that this has anything to do with Absalom?
I think David is sorry for the whole mess, for the whole situation, and perhaps realizing or repenting of his part in it.
Because what do we just see in verse 31?
He's asking for the council. Pray that God make the council of
Ahithophel
foolishness.
Right. I'm not sure at this point this is about Absalom. I think it's about Ahithophel coming in. He's been his counselor. Who is Ahithophel, by the way?
Oh, let's see.
His counselor, but what else is he in?
He's Absalom's advisor. He's turned against
He turns. Why would David's counselor, who he's had through all of his years, turn to Absalom? What else do we know about Ahithophel?
I got it written down here somewhere.
Who's his son? Don't you sit over there and smirk. You say something, please.
Oh.
I don't know.
I didn't know you wanted me to.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So if we look at other verses for Ahithophel.
Which are not the ones we've had, by the way.
Right, right. We can actually find out that in all probability, he was Bathsheba's grandfather.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
So as Bathsheba's grandfather, does it not... Does do things like when Ahithophel tells Absalom, what does he tell Absalom to do to the concubines?
To go up on the roof, when they go up on the roof. And that fulfills that thing that God told David through Nathan that his sons would take his
probably look out for something.
Right.
So, what else does it do? It's not only does it...
Shows that he's questioning the power, trying to take the power from David.
And humiliating him, isn't he? Mm-hmm. Which Ahithophel, that's the best way that Ahithophel could do that, because he took his daughter and granddaughter and did the same thing
right.
in his mind. I mean, you see all these little intrigues going on. And if forgiveness was there, would any of this happen? If Ahithophel had forgiven David, if David had gone to her family and asked forgiveness, then all of that would be different. But Ahithophel becomes the counselor of Absalom. Does Absalom take his counsel?
No.
Well, he does to a point, but eventually he doesn't. What happens?
He takes hushing.
Yeah. Because God had calamity on us.
So he took his counsel and changed it, didn't he? And who became the counselor? He became the counselor. Right? Mm-hmm. Yes. He became the counselor, and he was really a friend of David's. So what was his counsel? First, in war, what was Ahithophel's counsel for dealing with David?
Go after it.
Yeah, keep going after
He would go after him with 12,000 men. But he would just kill David. Now, doesn't that sound like the most expedient way to handle it?
Right now, in the middle of the night, right?
Right. So what did Hushai say?
He told
David
Absalom
would be
to go
waiting for him.
He sold them together, everybody up.
Yeah.
Go do a big old battle.
Big old war. And what did he do to make sure that David knew that? He sent the priest's sons. I don't have both. Yes, I do. He sent the sons of the priests to tell David, so David would know which way not to go. But, therefore, Ahithophel's counsel was what?
Ignored
and rejected. What did Ahithophel do? He went back home to his family. He set his stuff in order. And he hung himself. Again, could that have been different had forgiveness been part of this equation? All the way around. You see these very willful men, because we're not seeing the women, but the very willful men, you keep agitating and bringing about war because none of these people are repenting. None of these people are asking forgiveness. None of these people are forgiving. So we just keep killing more and more people. I think 22,000 died in that war. Okay, so he's gone. Who else? Anybody else?
Absalom's gone.
Absalom's gone. Where did I put him?
Up here.
Okay. And again, all of that could have been changed if forgiveness was part of it. Okay, what do we know about the priests? The two brothers, or the two priests and their sons. What do we know about them? Anything you think of?
They were loyal to David. They were loyal to David, weren't they?
They were loyal to David, and they stayed loyal to David.
They were spies, basically.
The sons were spies, weren't they? You got it.
Weren't they all?
Well, they were, but they weren't quite as agile. These guys were sent, and they could kind of hide. In fact, where did they end up hiding? With one of the women over here, the women's roles in Israel. What does the woman do to hide these boys?
Put them in the well.
They put them in the well and covered them up. And that was because somebody had seen them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Joab, or Joab. Okay, I'm running out of names here.
David?
Oh, I guess it was Joab. I mean, it would have been Absalom.
Who
is he? And what do we know about him?
He's another cousin.
Another cousin.
Yeah, and you kind of have
Ziba
up there. Ziba.
Well, I thought I put Ziba. Well, maybe I didn't.
Sheba.
No, it's a Z-I-B-A. But,
servant of Mephibosheth. Yeah. And saddled the donkeys and sent the. He provided food for David's army.
Okay, let's finish with him. What do we know about him first? Who was he?
He was servant of Mephibosheth.
Another relative. He was Joab's first cousin in 1725. And what did Absalom do with Amasa?
Oh, set him over the army in place of Joab.
In the place of that that Absalom did that, how about David? What did he do?
Didn't he still have Joab on his side?
He did the same thing. He put Amasa over Joab.
Oh.
And Joab, look at in verse 20, chapter 20.
Well, I didn't get that.
Right.
That's how come I don't know the answer to that.
There you go. In chapter 20, when David sent out, where did he do this? Where is Amasa? You feel like you're running around in circles, guys?
Verse 8, the king said to Amasa, call out the men of Judah for me within 3 days and be present here yourself.
What verse are you in, Grace?
20 verse 4. And
okay.
Then verse 5, so Amasa went to call out the men of Judah, but he delayed longer than the set time which he had appointed him.
Why do you suppose that he would delay? Keeping in mind he has been the commander for Absalom. What did you say?
I just said, more names.
He had been the commander for Absalom. Absalom is now dead. Who was Absalom sort of king over? Because we know he was anointed as king by the elders. Who was he king over?
Absalom?
Mm-hmm.
Israel.
Not Judah. So now Amasa is being asked to go get whom?
The men of Judah.
The men of Judah. You kind of get the feeling he might be a little afraid, because who has he been?
The commander of Israel.
He's been the commander of Israel. Absalom's commander. David has now made him his commander over Joab.
Joab killed his son.
Because Joab killed his son. Get all these intrigues here? So Joab, does Joab take that like a man?
No.
Does he take it like a commander? Yeah. Okay, so Amasa is kind of sticking his feet in the ground because he, I think, this is my interpretation, that he's a little afraid to go deal with the men of Israel because these are the ones he was just fighting. So he puts it off a little while. Joab comes in, takes over, and Amasa comes when he takes over. What does he do then? His first cousin, remember, grabs his hair. He had long hair, too, evidently.
Sticks it to him.
Sticks it to him right in the middle of the road and leaves him bleeding and dying, but not dead. Bleeding and dying. So what do the men come who are coming through on this road do?
Stop.
They stop. They don't know what to do. They don't know. They can't really go by him. So Joab figures this out, and what does he do?
He moves Amasa to the environment over him.
Got him out of the way, and they just went on. Joab is a very bottom-line man. He is totally a commander. He does not look at people as human beings. Neither did his brother, but not as badly as Joab. I just get this, and I mean, think of all the military movies, or I hate military movies. This is my personal thing. I've told you that before, but every one of them, there's always some guy up there giving orders that just annihilate huge crops of people, and that's what Joab does. Joab has seemed to have no, you never learn about his family, his wife, his children, wife's children, who knows? You get the, he is willing to take down anybody who gets in the way of what he thinks it should be. And for him, that means even if they're David's sons, it's like you should have no feeling for this boy. He stood up against you. He needs to die. Period. That's it. So Joab does the same to his first cousin, Amasa, who was the commander for Absalom, then became the commander for David, and was killed by Joab. Okay. Anything to add there? Are you exhausted yet?
Well, if
so Amasa was killed by Joab?
Yes. So in chapter 20.
Yeah.
Oh. I got lost. I'm sorry.
Yeah. If we read farther, it tells how.
Go ahead.
Was it him or was it Peter that was killed by the rock being thrown on his head? Or was it Joab?
No, that was Ahithophel. That was. No, that was a different story. I think.
Well, it's in verse or chapter 22. Okay. Let's see. So blah 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 blah. So they're up at siege. They have a siege ramp against a city. Okay.
And what city is that, and why?
Okay. So it's right after Amasa was in his own blood, and Joab threw him off the road. Okay. Then, as soon as he was removed from the highway, in verse 13. All the men passed on after Joab to pursue Sheba, the son of Bishba.
This is him.
Yes.
And why Sheba? Hold that there a minute.
The
why
son
are we
of
having
Bishri.
Problems with Sheba? Who is he?
Okay.
And guy.
He's worthless.
Right.
But what's he doing?
So it goes back to the beginning of 20, yeah.
Well, in verse 6 it says, he will do us more harm than Absalom. David said to Abishai, take your Lord's servant and pursue him so that he does not find for himself fortified cities and escape from our sight.
So Sheba is wanting to do what?
David is afraid that he's going to go after David.
Which he is obviously wants to be king. Who is this guy? Do we know?
Sheba is just the son of Beatrice.
He's a worthless fellow, it says in verse 1.
He's just some worthless fellow who decides to stand up and become king.
Yeah.
So he evidently gets some people behind him. Okay, now back to the story. What happens to him?
Okay, and so, let's see. So they're pursuing Sheba. And then...
The this is chapter 20.
Correct, correct.
Yeah, and they build a ramp up to the ramp.
Right, siege ramp.
Joab were wreaking destruction in order to topple the wall.
So what are they planning on doing? They're planning on toppling the wall to go into the city.
Just one person, yeah.
To annihilate anybody who gets in their way, because this is Joab.
And then a wise woman comes along and asks to speak to Joab.
And what is that? And this is our wise woman number one.
She says, who do you want?
She says she'll live.
And so
she cut off his head and they throw him the head, right?
She pretty much asks him, what's up? Why are you doing this? And he tells her and he says, rather than annihilating everybody, how about
the city?
Instead of taking the city, how about if we give him to you, and the city does, it raises him up, chops his head off, and throws it over. So Joab has the head, and knows that he's dead. And that's good. Why is that wise?
She saved her city.
She saved her city.
Some people would have been killed.
She did. So we see wise woman number one, and as we think about it, who are the other two wise women we talked about, or good women? You were to look them up.
Didn't get that far.
Why was Abigail a wise woman? What story did we see with her?
Oh, you mean in the past? Okay.
Well, she gave us in the lesson three women.
Because she saw peace. Go ahead.
What was going to happen there her foolish husband?
And they were all going to get wiped out.
It was going to be another war caused by arrogance and unforgiveness and foolishness. Mm-hmm. And Abigail, in her wisdom, figured out and approached so that nobody died. Then. Okay, so there's Abigail, who is wise, who uses words and brought food and everything that those men needed in this war to in their travels to remain healthy. That's what they were looking for. They were just looking for food, which is what you do to people coming through, but Nabal wouldn't.
And she spoke to David about, think about what you're doing. Is this really what you want to do in the Lord's eyes?
She brought wisdom into a volatile, emotional situation. Again, David is being emotional, and he is functioning on emotions, and his reputation was questioned here. So he is willing to kill all these men because of his pride, and she was very wise in what she did. And the third woman was Jael. Do you remember the story of Jael?
The tent peg.
The tent peg. Go ahead. Yeah. And her husband was on their side, so he assumed she was a safe place. And she was not safe. She took the tent peg and put it right through his head.
They wrote a song about her.
She's pretty much known throughout history, not as his wife, but as the lady with the peg. Okay, now do you guys see why we're doing this? We could go through each of these chapters. I know some of you are overwhelmed, but what I'm trying to do is show you it's really about the people. We're learning about the people in these chapters. And they'll be in one chapter here, and then another chapter here, and then another chapter here. And if you read all those, and don't put them together, you're not getting continuity. The continuity starts with what Absalom, Tamar, and his brother Amnon, what happened to Tamar, how Jonadab was involved in that. And then we see how David responded to that. In all of that comes David's priests and David's commander and eventually David's enemy, but David's commander, another counselor and a counselor. This counselor was related to Bathsheba. This counselor was loyal to David. We see Amasa, who was another general. he became the general for Absalom, and then after Absalom was killed by Joab, he became the commander for David because Joab killed David's son, right? It's important to see this because we're not done with Joab yet, and when Joab dies, he's going to die because a lot of these reasons. So this is why it's important that we understand at least to a point. Okay, so we come up with these three people. We just went through the women and who were the...
Who was the first woman?
The first woman was... help me God. Oh, she doesn't have a name. She's just called
just
the wise
woman. Woman.
She's the wise
that's,
woman.
That's right. What
the wise
I was,
woman of Tekoa, is
yeah.
that the one? Yeah.
Well, that's another one. Mm-hmm. They didn't put that in there, but that I think should have been in our list too. The wise woman of Tekoa, which again, we don't know her name, but what do we know about her, Grace?
Joab sent to and brought the wise woman from there and said to her, please pretend to be a mourner and put on mourning garments now and do not anoint yourself with oil, but be like a woman who has been mourning for the dead many days. Go to the king, speak to him. Now the woman spoke to the king. She fell on her face to the ground and prostrated. Help, O king. What's your trouble? Truly I'm a widow, for my husband is dead. Your maidservant had two sons. He's telling the story about... she's relaying the story. Truly I'm a widow, for my husband is dead. Your maidservant had two sons, but the two of them struggled together in the field, and there was no one to separate them, so one struck the other and killed him. Behold, the whole family has risen against your maidservant, and they say, hand over the one who struck his brother, that he may be put to death for the life of his brother when he killed, and destroy the heir also. Thus they will extinguish my coal which is left, so as to leave my husband neither name nor remnant on the face of the earth.
Because they were wanting to take her second son.
So go up to your house, and I will give orders concerning you. O my lord the king, the iniquity is on me and my father's house, but the king and his throne are guiltless. So he says, whoever speaks to you, bring him to me, and he will not touch you anymore.
And what chapter are you in?
I'm in chapter 14, verse 11. Then she says, please let the king remember the Lord your God, so that the avenger of blood will not continue to destroy it. Otherwise they will destroy my son. If the Lord lives, not one hair of your son shall fall to the ground. David said.
So what was accomplished with her story, which isn't really her story, but it's a story that she shared. What is accomplished? What's the outcome? Joab got her, because you know he couldn't tell a story like that.
Joab got her so that who did Joab kill? Amnon? No.
This is about getting Absalom to be able to come back.
Right.
This is it's preparing.
So that's what it's so about. She's telling him so that he'll bring Absalom back
right.
and not harm him
right.
because he killed Amnon.
Right. So that's the fourth woman, even though we had three in our thing, it was really the fourth woman. And that Joab brought her to David. Okay.
Can I speak on Joab's behalf?
Absolutely.
Okay, and you're looking at this whole big old picture thing. David's whole purpose was to conquer the Philistines and all of that kind of stuff. Well, if you... in
it was Saul who was out to kill the Philistines.
Yeah, but I mean, David was supposed to finish the job or whatever. But Hashiah, when he says... to watch out, because with David are all these mighty men. His men are mighty. Okay, without Joab and his military thing, he wouldn't have, I don't think he would have been able to accomplish all of this conquering that he did.
This is why there's good and bad in everything, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's nobody who's purely bad, and there's nobody who's purely good.
Joab was tough.
When we look
and
at David, he's supposed to be...
conquered all of these places.
David is supposed to be a man after God's own heart, but there's an awful lot we can find he didn't do very well.
Yes.
And the outcome of that for us is what? I mean, as we look at the life of David, and know that God said this was a man after his own heart. What in David made him a man after his own heart?
Well, he sought God. Like, he went to pray. He sought God, you know, in a lot of things. Some things he didn't. He's like all the rest of us, you know. I'll go ahead and repent later. Type attitude. But for the most part, he sought God, and Absalom didn't seek God to find out if he was supposed to be in taking over the kingdom and all this kind of stuff. He just did it.
Sometimes he functioned on his feelings, his emotions.
Yeah.
This is why I'm trying to help you see David both in wisdom and emotions. Mm-hmm. When he relies on his emotions, good things don't happen. When he goes to the Lord in prayer, good things happen. Can this be our story too? Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Stop. So the story of David teaches us a lot of different things from a lot of different places. And we can also, when we talk about forgiveness, I want David perfect, right? But he isn't, so I need to forgive David. I also need to see in David, I have tons of stuff here. I probably ought to take one of those vapory ones. Be able to look at these and analyze what went wrong in all the various different people. Where did they go off? Can we go off the same way? I mean, we look at people's lives, and sometimes, as we'll go through the kings, we're going to see how the kings just seem to be godly men and go on and do the right thing, and by the time they're done with their lives, they're not. So they stop somewhere. And I think that's the point, especially since our group here tends to be a little bit older, except for you. that we need to keep on persevering and overcoming and persevering, because there's times where we're just gonna feel like quitting. We've done it. There's just no more in me to do, and that's not true. The Lord says He's never going to give more to us than we can handle. In Him. Okay, so we've gone through these people. Let's look at these guys. Tell me about Shimei. What do you know about him?
Well, he's some kind of a descendant from Saul.
So he comes from that family. So he has a prerequisite of who he's committed to, right?
And he's upset at David, and he curses him and throws rocks and does a protest.
When we first see him... is in chapter
15 or 16?
Let's see. 16.
Okay. I got a kick out of this part, this first part here, where he sees David coming, you know, and he's cursing him. Get out, you man of bloodshed and worthless fellow. I thought, how does that compare to what we see in the headlines today?
And why would he see him as a man of bloodshed and worthless?
I don't know about worthless, but a man of bloodshed he was.
As a matter of fact, when we get into the temple, God's not going to let him build the temple because he's a man of bloodshed. So he sees that. But whose blood is he thinking about?
Saul's, the family.
He's thinking about Saul's, right. And in that sense, he didn't get that God is actually the one who put David there at this point. So,
well, and then we'll see Shimei again, I think.
Well, let's keep looking at him there, and then we do meet him again. We meet him in 18.
In 13, his men went on way, and Shimei went along on a hillside parallel, cursing, casting stones, and threw dust at him.
He is a Benjamite. That's how he's related to Saul. His father was Gera, and that's one of the Benjamite family, of the family of Benjamin. So, and we know that Saul came from there, and it's the ten tribes that belong to the north that he is a part of. So he cursed, he called him a man of bloodshed, he called him a worthless fellow. Verse 8, the Lord return upon you the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. So he thinks he's stolen Saul's rightful place. Did David ever fight with Saul?
No.
So who was it that killed Saul?
The Philistines.
Because the Philistines are who Saul fought with.
Yeah. And then Saul fell on his own sword.
And then Saul fell on his own sword, right. So it wasn't David who even had anything to do with the death of Saul. The Lord has given the kingdom to the hand of your son Absalom. So he kind of bypassed David. He thinks that Absalom is now the king, or should be. And you are taken in your own evil, for you are a man of bloodshed. Now, Abishai once says what in verse 9, 10?
Let me go cut off his head.
What does David say?
Why should this say, God curse my Lord?
What does David say to him in verse 10?
What have I to do with you, O son of Sarai?
Now remember that, because that's not the last time we're going to hear him say it.
If he curses, and if the Lord has told him to curse David, then who shall say, why have you done so?
Why do you suppose David would let him do that? What has just happened in David's life?
He's leaving Jerusalem. Absalom is taking over the kingdom.
Kind of sounds like David's wondering if he's in favor with the Lord or not.
Yeah.
Well, if God has favor with me, he'll bring me back to see the ark, and if not, then
he's almost sort of self-punishing in that. Yeah, he doesn't really know where he stands.
God might send somebody curse you.
But maybe the day will turn around. Verse 11, David said to Abishai and all his servants, behold, my son who came out for me seeks my life. How much more now this Benjamin? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him. Do we know that the Lord has told him to do this?
No.
I think that's a little bit of his emotions in there. A little bit of self-pity. Perhaps the Lord will look on my affliction and return good to me instead of this cursing. So David and his men went on the way, and Shimei went along the hillside parallel with him, and as he went, he cursed and cast stones and threw dust. The king and all the people who were with him. What do you suppose that's doing to the guys who
they're just thinking about him throwing dirt at him.
Protest march.
Like he's throwing a
tantrum. Yeah, that's really what the picture is.
But he was parallel on like another hillside or something, so was he reaching him?
Well, we don't know how far away it was and how big a hill it was, but right. They could hear him. I know, it is a very funny picture.
And that does, before we leave, I'll just give these out, but there's stuff in here about the Mount of Olives and the path that he took, that David took.
Oh, did you want to share that with us?
I can just hand it to everybody and they can look. Okay. So the it's very methodical how David left. I mean, we're told again and again that they stopped here, and they stopped here, and they stopped here. And it was all leaving Jerusalem, going to the Mount of Olives. And it parallels other things in Scripture. And so I can give you all, there's a couple of maps here, because we're not really shown a map in the thing that we have on where is the Mount of Olives compared to Jerusalem? Where is it? Well, it's very strategic. David could have left. I mean, Jerusalem, yes, there was walls and stuff, but David could have left out of any other direction.
Because there were 12 walls, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, 12 gates.
Yeah. He could have left out of any other direction, but he went east over the Mount of Olives. And there's significance in that, because we see it again whenever Jesus is on the earth, and the Mount of Olives is where he goes and he prays with his disciples. There's just so much on the Mount of Olives in Gethsemane. And Gethsemane is called the Olive Press. And that's where Jesus was. So there's just a lot, and we don't need to get into detail, but I've got the details here. And I thought it was important, and maybe after we're done, I have pictures and stuff that y'all can look at, because there's something very significant for our times also, besides the fact that Jesus is coming, and that's an important thing to remember. He's coming, and it's in the scripture, it talks about coming from the east and going in through the eastern gate. Well, in what's happened today, in recent times is, and I'll show you pictures, the Eastern Gate going out of Jerusalem, it's all walled up. The Muslims have all walled it up. And what have they done right outside the Eastern Gate? There's a Muslim cemetery right outside the Eastern Gate. Because in their mind, no rabbi, no Jewish person is going to come back, go through the defiled Muslim cemetery to come back into the city. So that's how they think they've stopped.
That's how they're going to keep Jesus away.
That's how they're keeping Jesus away. Yeah. And it's all, there's pictures I can show you and stuff when we're all done, and I've got things to hand out. And there's a map in here, or a couple of maps in here about just what that looked like. The picture maybe isn't so good, but anyway, there's just significance
wonderful
to that.
Thank you.
So when we're done.
Yeah.
Well, I was just looking at it going, Kay has nothing about this.
No.
There's no maps in
here.
Well,
that's why I said there's so much information here, but to really understand it, we need a whole lot more information and more time.
Could we stay on this one chapter or one area for a year or two?
Really could. Yeah. It really could.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to get through all of them so we continue with our study, because it isn't just all the little words. It's the big picture we're trying to develop and understand. And that's a huge part of it. Okay, so three people. Tell and more about. So, are we done with him in chapter 16? No. Let's go to 19. And verse 16.
Now we learn more who was from the city.
Chapter 16 is where David is weeping for Absalom. Victory was turned into mourning for the people, and Joab has called David to love the people of Israel, because at this point they pretty much think if all of them died and Absalom was still alive, that would be make David happy. And so David goes down to the gate, right? And Israel now files through the gate where David is sitting. And all the people came before the king. David, verse 11, well, verse 9 through 8, 9, and 10 talk about his relationship to Israel. And 11 and 12 talk about to Judah, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, since the word of Israel has come to the king, even to his house, so you're my brothers? Why then should you be last to bring the king back? There's a kind of a hissy fit war between Israel and Judah, which you look at, and then we come to Shimei again in verse 16. Son of Gera, the Benjamite, who was from Bahurim, and what do we learn about him there? Is he still throwing dirt?
No, he came down with a minute to meet King David.
Now he's groveling in the dirt.
Now he's groveling in the dirt. Well, he could have just taken off and never come back again, but he didn't. He knows. I don't know what the difference is, because we don't see his process, but he repents, doesn't he?
Fell down right before they were about to cross the Jordan.
Why the Jordan? What were they doing there?
Bring over the king's household.
Verse 16 says, and Shimei, son of Gera, the Benjamite, so on and so forth, came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. There were thousands of men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons, and his 20 servants, and they rushed to the Jordan before the king. Then they kept crossing the fort to bring over the king's household and do what was right in his sight. Do what was good in his sight. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was about to cross the Jordan. And he said to the king, "Let not my lord consider me guilty, nor remember what your servant did wrong on that day, when my lord the king came out from Jerusalem so that the king would take it to heart. For the servant knows that I have sinned." So he's repenting. And we've got a beautiful picture of repentance here. "Therefore, behold, I have come today, the first of the house of Joseph, to go down to meet the Lord, my Lord, the king." So he is an ambassador for his people. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said, "Should not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed?" And David said, "What have I to do with you, O son of Zeruiah, that you should this day be an adversary to me? Should any man be put to death in Israel today?" Why not that day? What was that day?
Celebration. He's coming home.
It is. "Do I not know that I am king over Israel today?" The king said, because that's what he brought him too, didn't he? The king said to Shimei, "You shall not die." Thus the Lord swore to him.
You shall not die today. But, I mean, he doesn't say today. But then later in, because there's a cross reference to 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 8, where David gives Solomon instructions regarding Shimei.
And then Joab. So at this point, we're not going to get there.
Right.
But we're seeing this.
Yep.
So put it in your remembrance, because we'll come back to it.
Oh, yeah. Remember it.
We will come back to it.
What did you say?
We will
trying to put it there.
So what did David do?
No,
we're supposed to be asking ourselves, how did David handle him? He didn't kill him. He handled him with grace at this point. Okay, what about Mephibosheth? What happened to Mephibosheth? And tell me about Ziba, and what the heck did he do?
He lied, for one thing.
What did he say? It's not in this chapter. It's earlier. But what did he say?
Ziba said that
Mephibosheth. You have to say it really fast.
He sided with Absalom, which he wasn't.
Right. And Ziba told him he was.
Yeah.
In fact, Ziba told him that he was waiting to get his land back. I mean, he was waiting to get everything back, he would be the king. That is not any part we've ever seen with Mephibosheth at all.
No.
But, so when that story came to David, what did David do?
He gave Ziba all the land.
He gave Ziba everything. Then when, in our chapter here, chapter 16, verse 24, Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, grandson, came down to meet the king. He had neither cared for his feet, trimmed his mustache, washed his clothes. From that day the king departed until the day he came home in peace. It was when he came from Jerusalem to meet the king that the king said to him, "Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?" And he answered, "O my lord, the king, my servant, deceived me, for your servant said, 'I will saddle a donkey for myself, that I may ride on it and go to the king, because your servant is lame.'" Now, you remember when Ziba came to David in the earlier chapters, he brought him what? He brought him a whole bunch of food and stuff to feed the army. And he came to him as if it was him that was giving it, when it was really Mephibosheth.
But he took it from Mephibosheth, because Ziba was given charge by David to care for Mephibosheth's land and his gardens, his everything.
And he was supposed to be a servant.
Right.
And he got a little bit jealous.
So he used all that to turn on Mephibosheth.
Which really shocked me when he did that, honestly, because I thought he was supposed to be a good guy. "My lord the king, my servant deceived me." All right, verse 23. "Moreover, he has slandered your servant to my lord the king, but my lord the king is like an angel of God. Therefore, do what is right or good in your sight." And what did David do?
He divided the land between him and Ziba.
Now, being the one who wants justice, my first response was, that's not fair. What does David not know? He doesn't know he's telling the truth. So, and Mephibosheth, who goes on to prove himself, is a man who is willing to give it all up that David came home safe. So, is this going to bother Mephibosheth? That's not me. No, it doesn't seem to. So David chose the right thing, but it still made me feel like not fair.
It's kind of like Solomon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was fair.
Yeah, that was fair. He did pretty good with that one.
Yeah.
But it did prove it, didn't it? The way Mephibosheth responded proved that he didn't do it. And I think that David was probably quite aware of that. Okay, our last guy that we're paying attention to, believe it or not, we're going to get done with everything today, was Barzillai, the Gileadite, had come down from, this is in verse 31. What do we learn about him, and who is this dude?
He's old.
He's old. He's 80.
Right here.
And what has he done to be in a good spot with the king?
He took care of the king way back whenever the king was staying at Mahanaim.
And he came and brought the... Yes. And he was the one who brought food to the army. So he did. He took care of him. Somebody wants you to... It sounds like a church bell, Grace.
That's what it did. Okay. This did Diane tell me she's waiting for me outside.
Okay. She's early.
Yeah. She's anxious.
So he knows... Okay, so he provided for David. So what does David want to do for him?
Sustaining in Jerusalem.
He wants to bring him to Jerusalem. Why?
Take care of him.
And what is Barzillai's response?
I'm too old. I want to stay here and die. Take my son and stay out.
I like my place. So in taking his son, what would... I mean, we really see anything else about him.
Here's your servant.
Is that his son?
I don't think so.
No.
Just thinking.
Somebody who is associated with him?
Here's your servant, Chimham. Let him cross over with my lord the king and do for him what is good in your sight. And again, yes, we really haven't seen why he picked him.
Somebody to go instead of him.
And that he would go instead of him, right. It says... But he wanted to die in his own bed, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. And be buried with his fathers.
And be buried with his fathers. Mm-hmm. So, ladies, we're actually done 5 minutes early. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, can we do it again?
What I would suggest is, because we've done this, it really just wet your whistles.
Yeah,
I would suggest you go back and just read it again and remember what we've talked about and try and see how it fits, because I'm sure some of you are feeling like you're just being overwhelmed with this very dark cloud.
We need to go through another complete lesson.
It's something you can study for a whole long time.
It's a lot of information.
Wow.
So it's given us a taste.
Yeah, but I feel that pretty much in every lesson I've been in. I don't feel like I've ever really finished to understanding fully what's there.
You learn a lot about the people.
Right.
Their responses and their characters. What do you learn about God?
That's a very good question.
That's a long question.
Well, I
say that a lot.
And I think that some of it's not done yet.
That is so
I also would go through and, like you were saying, with when you get the paper from Connie, I would go through and just call the places.
Yeah, that'll be
so you're seeing where they're going, what they're doing when, what this looks like. I just
and why?
Yeah. The only reason, now, if I had just gone through verse by verse, you'd have thought you understood it, you'd have gone away and you'd understood nothing. Because going through verse by verse doesn't pull all the things together, and it's about people. Some chapters are about different things, like war, whatever. But this is very much about people. And the people that are important surrounding David somehow, whether it's Absalom or the high priest, or the priest's sons, or the different wars. I mean, you've got wars in here. You've got commanders of wars, different kinds of commanders. One that was a little on the fearful side, and one that was ready to wipe everything out. You're seeing and you haven't seen the end of these people yet. In their end, you do see how God, like I said, I look at these things and go, it's not fair, and I do that humorously, but by the time it's done, you're going to go, whoa, well, I didn't really want him that to die so absolutely bad that way. So just keep your mind, keep paying attention to the people. If they're not dead, we may see them again. Start thinking about, because next week and a week after, I'm going to have you tell Joy if you want to do our next class. Our next class is going to be a New Testament topic of the gifts of the Spirit. So it'll be a little bit different. We'll be approaching it differently. We won't have so many names. We won't have so much to read, but we'll discuss. Well, we have 3 weeks after this, and then we need the 4 weeks. Whatever time that is.
These are extra kits.
Okay, thank you.
For like 8 months. She got
here. I have it down somewhere. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Take one.
Or you can pass it. You have a.
Okay.